Social Security is the subject that's likely to dominate domestic political discourse in the coming months. President Bush says he'll talk up his plan to change the system in his State of the Union address next Wednesday. We've aired a series this past week on how different generations view Social Security, and we asked you to phone in your questions. To answer them, we have invited two experts in the field to join us today. Kent Smetters, formerly a Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Treasury, is Associate Professor at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. He's in Philadelphia. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be here.
And Alicia Minnell is Professor and Director of the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College, also a former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury. Alicia Minnell, welcome to the program.
Delighted to be here.
And while you're both here for your knowledge of the subject, I think it's fair to say that, Kent Smetters, you generally support the administration approach to reforming Social Security, and Alicia Minnell, you don't? Fair enough?
Fair enough.
Fair enough.
So, on to question one.
Hello, my name is Joey McGillivary. I'm 50 years old. I live in San Antonio, Texas. I want to know why the government has billions of dollars to spend on what it wants to spend on, but it doesn't have the money on programs like Social Security.
I guess if I can paraphrase what Mr. McGillivary is asking, what's the difference between the money the government spends on Social Security and the money it spends on defense or agriculture or other things? Ken Smetters?
It's similar money, obviously, but the difference is that Social Security was always intended historically to be a separate pension-like insurance program. But it's really important to point out that Social Security faces a $10.4 trillion shortfall right now. It's a very large shortfall. And even if we eliminated all other discretionary spending in the government, we would not be able to pay for both Social Security and Medicare over the long term.
Alicia Minnell, can you enlighten us a bit here?
Social Security is a separate program that's sort of on autopilot. It just goes on every year. Congress doesn't have to make a decision. So what happens is that the actuaries look at it over a 75-year period and say, oh, my goodness, we've promised more benefits than we have coming in revenues, and therefore there's a shortfall. In point of fact, we have plenty of money to pay full benefits through the year 2042, and the payroll tax would give Social Security enough money to pay 70% of benefits thereafter. Defense, on the other hand, is not on autopilot. Congress makes a decision every single year of whether to fund it or not. So if you look forward, there are sort of no official defense commitments already in the budget, and I think that's what makes the two types of expenditures so different.
Here's another question from a listener. It concerns the level at which people are taxed for Social Security.
My name is Charlie Spiegel. I live in Pipersville, Pennsylvania. I am married with one child. I own my own home. I'm 52 years old. My question is, if Social Security taxes were paid on all income, how much additional revenue would that raise, assuming that no additional benefits were given out at the top end? And how much additional revenue would it raise if proportional benefits were given out at the top end?
And we should begin, let's say, Alicia Minnell, by saying here that there now is a ceiling at what level we pay Social Security tax.
In 2005, you pay Social Security tax on earnings up to $90,000. Now, I can't answer Mr. Spiegel's question precisely, but I can say that if you increase the earnings level up to $140,000, that you'd eliminate about 45% of the deficit. So as you go up, you don't gain proportionately because there are fewer and fewer people up there. But it's generally for those people who want to put some money into the system, raising that $90,000 limit is one of the options that they consider.
And Ken Smetters?
The problem with this as a policy measure is that it would really increase marginal tax rates a lot, and especially small business owners who still create most of the jobs. In the United States, they already face marginal tax rates of about 45%. You know, they increase it to about 55%, and that's why even left-leaning policymakers are not seriously considering this option anymore.
Next question concerns the difference between private investment and Social Security.
My name is Carlos Moreno. I'm 40 years old and live in Atlanta, married with two children. My question is, given the average rate of return, assuming no market crash or boom, would someone be better off or worse with the proposed accounts?
I assume same amount of money, either going into some kind of private account or in the Social Security fund. First, Ken Smetters.
Well, young people especially would be better off because the Social Security system can only afford to pay them a level of benefits that's compatible with about a 0% rate of return on their contributions. So even a risk-free treasury bonds would do better.
But between one's 20s and early 20s and late 60s, say, when you might be contributing, can you assume no market crash or boom? Or is there always some event of that sort over such a period of time?
There is always certainly that risk, and this is why I would always compare things relative to treasury yields in order to do a kind of this risk adjustment.
And Alicia Monell, your thoughts on the comparison?
Robert, I think it's just very important that the proposals that are kind of floating around don't assume the current level of money going into the system in terms of promised benefits. What it involves a big cut in benefits first, and then introducing these private accounts in this diminished program as a way of sort of giving people a shot at earning some of those cuts back. And the caller is right in that stocks have earned more than bonds over the last 100 years or whatever history we have. But there's also a lot of risk associated with those investments, and that's why they earn a higher return. And 25% of the time, stocks earn less than bonds.
Our next question addresses the hypothetical of there being private accounts of the sort that have been proposed by President Bush.
Hi, this is Paula Soburn calling from Bend, Oregon. I am 53 years old, married, and have a 19-year-old daughter. And my question is, my understanding is that Social Security's administrative costs are very low. And I was wondering if you could compare the costs of changing it over to a savings plan thing like George W. Bush wants to, as opposed to the way the system is set up now.
Costs of operating the fund. Let's start with Ken Smetters.
Well, one model is the government's Thrift Savings Plan, which is the 401k plan for federal governments that they currently use. It has a very low cost compatible with Social Security's. Truthfully, we don't know what Social Security's administrative costs are because they share resources with the IRS in terms of computers and things like that. However, the caller's concern is correct, and that is experience with other countries, including Chile, UK, and Sweden, have shown that administrative costs can sometimes be too high, and so those countries are currently working on getting those administrative costs down.
Alicia Monell, those costs in the countries that Ken Smetters mentioned can be quite high, I gather.
They can erode, essentially lop off the top 20 or 30% of the benefits you would have received. So a comparable calculation for Social Security would be sort of 2%. So the cost, unless it's structured very carefully, can be extremely high.
I think our next question is as much about semantics as economics.
I'm Peter Collins of Ann Arbor, Michigan. The most relevant fact about me is that I'm 59. I noticed that administration spokesmen refer to personal accounts, but Robert Siegel and others refer to private accounts. And my question is this: is there a difference, and why the difference in terminology?
What do you both say? Ken Smetters, do you speak of personal accounts or private accounts?
A little jab there at Robert Siegel.
Yes.
People who oppose this reform typically use the terminology private accounts because it associates it with privatization, and the term privatization doesn't pull very well. And the people who favor this type of reform use the word personal accounts because it conveys a sense of ownership and responsibility, and it tends to pull very well. So it's all politics.
I always thought personal had more to do with your body and privacy with property. Alicia Monell, which do you say?
I do say private, but I agree with Kent's analysis that the terminology comes from polling, that private doesn't poll well and personal polls much better.
Well, let's hear one more listener.
Hi, this is Chuck Beck from Dearborn, Michigan. I'm age 52. I'm married. I have a daughter, age 12. My question is as follows. As your January 25th ATC broadcast suggested, Social Security funds have been used for other purposes, such as enabling tax cuts or anything else. When were they so used? Why were they so used? And who were the main supporters or promoters of that usage?
Alicia Manel?
In point of fact, no money has ever been taken out of the Social Security Trust Fund. The bonds are in there, and they will be redeemed by the Treasury when it comes time to pay benefits. I think the way that the misconception arises is that because there have been large surpluses in the Social Security Trust Fund, they have sort of masked big deficits in the non-Social Security part of the budget.
And Ken Smetters?
I agree in part with what Alicia said. The trust fund contains IOUs from the U.S. Treasury that will be honored by the U.S. Treasury. The problem was that the U.S. Treasury was supposed to use that money it got from Social Security in exchange for those IOUs to reduce the government debt in order to increase its ability to repay Social Security in the future. But Congress had other plans for that model, instead use it to fund tax cuts during the 1980s and spending increases during the 1990s. And it was able to get away with that trick because it focuses on the unified surplus or the unified deficit measure, which adds the Social Security surpluses right back into the budget accounting. This accounting, by the way, would be illegal in the private sector. So even former Senator Tom Daschle, Representative Dick Gephardt, and others have complained for a long time that we've really been spending the money in the trust on through the back door.
Here's a short answer question for both of you very quickly. Is there a Social Security crisis today? Ken Smetters?
Well, I don't want to use the word crisis because Medicare's problems are even bigger. And so what would I use to describe Medicare? I'd have to refer to like biblical metaphors or something like that. And so I would say it's a big problem, whereas Medicare is a crisis. However, the combined problem is just huge.
And Alicia Manel?
Social Security has a manageable financing shortfall equal to less than 1% of GDP over the next 75 years. I view that as something that can be solved with the will to do it.
Alicia Manel, Professor of Management and Director of the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College, and Ken Smetters, Associate Professor at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. Thanks to both of you for talking with us about Social Security.
Nice to be here.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you who phoned in your questions to be answered.